Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 182 for July 2nd, 2009. We're glad you're here today, and as we're plotting a course to Podcastia Prime of the Aurelia subsector, we'll give our take on the StarCraft II news that it's losing its LAN play. Dan and I share our strategy for beating Gas Powered later today at their own game when we play them in a round of Demigod. We dust off our mystical snow globe for holiday releases and give it a good shake and do our best to predict what games we think will be delayed. Pack in our playlists and a few questions, and we'll be on our way. All right, I'm your host, Evan Lottie. I'm glad to be joining you guys this Thursday. Along with me, we have Dan Erebus Maximus Stapleton.
I haven't been practicing my Erebus impersonation, so I'm just going to let that slide.
That would be minimalist.
Blah, there you go.
And alongside, we shouldn't forget Logan. I nearly killed Tim Schafer, Decker.
I did. Okay, thanks. Hi. It was an accident. Mistakes were made.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll touch on that later.
I'm pretty sure we've told that story on the podcast like years ago.
But... Oh, really?
I do remember, yeah. Good.
But the statute of limitations is up now, so.
Thank goodness. We've also got Josh Pork Floss Augustine.
Delicious.
It's your new favorite food, is that right?
Yeah. Only when mixed with other things, though.
Like what? Pineapple?
Yeah, fried rice, pineapple, ham chunks. Tasty.
Fantastic. And as always, the podcast producer extraordinaire, Andy the Bauminator.
What's up? Glad to be along for this ride of podcast-tination.
Man, there's so many suffixes that can be applied to the word podcast. It's pretty fun, actually.
But how many should be? Very few.
Indeed.
Maybe ING would be.
All right, so I want to get your guys' reflections on this big news last week that StarCraft II has jettisoned LAN support. For the game, there's not going to be any official offline play. You're not going to be able to install one copy and play with a bunch of friends locally like you did in StarCraft I. Everything's going to run through Battle.net. It's kind of their, as I understand it, their effort to make that service attractive, to make it Steam-like, and obviously to avoid piracy. But I want to get your guys' take on it. Is this really something we should be concerned about? Is it going to affect most players? How are competitive players going to find a loophole through this and avoid cheating systems?
I mean, it's really, for 99% of people that get StarCraft, it's really not going to be that big a deal. Let's just detail what it's going to do exactly. Being able to create a game on your private LAN with no connection to Battle.net or anything like that, you basically have to create a game on Battle.net. So you have to be connected to the internet. You have to create a game on Battle.net, and even if you got two guys in the same room on the same LAN, they can still play together, and they will essentially be playing together exactly as they would have on the LAN. The only difference is they're logging into Battle.net to make sure they've all got their own copies. So the primary difference is that they're just taking an extra step here to make sure that everybody has a legitimate copy. Whereas before, you could invite a bunch of friends over, install your copy of StarCraft I on all the computers involved, and play a LAN game. So that's the limitation that's being introduced here. It's not going to stop anything from playing a game on a LAN, really.
Wait, so just to be clear, because everything I saw, you can't log into Battle.net 2 then create a LAN game. You still have to create an internet game and be connected to the internet the whole time you're playing, not just when you're authenticating, right?
Right, but I mean, effectively, you're still playing a LAN game.
Yeah, but you're still prone to all kind of internet troubles if you have spotty internet and lag and all that sort of stuff.
I sincerely doubt. No, actually, you're not prone to lag because the traffic is still peer to peer. It's not actually going from you to Battle.net to the other player. You're connected peer to peer, like pretty much every RTS ever. It's not a server based thing like that.
What was that clever that they called it, like spawn multiplayer? Just yeah. That, what was that clever name?
Yeah, I forgot. Well, that is a spawn Multiplayer spawn.
And you could, but that was a cool feature that Blizzard sort of pioneered, where they you could install essentially any machine, just the multiplayer portion of the game.
Right, and I don't believe they have any plans to do that this time around. So I that was an added value that is being taken away, or not, you know, taken away, never actually promised, but right. You know, kind of was implied. It was in the previous game, but you know, it's not going to be in this one.
One hand giveth, the other hand taketh away.
So I guess, I'd anticipate, again, with it being peer-to-peer, that's going to put a lot of focus on the usability and the functionality of Battle.net. If I know there is a certain segment of people that, I mean, you saw with Demigod when they started having connection issues, people starting using Hamachi and other API services to create virtual LANs and play that way very directly with their friends. So you know, if the only avenue for playing multiplayer is Valve.net, therefore that service needs to be that much more solid and usable and, you know, fail-safe, basically.
It does. And the moment Battle.net goes down and people have trouble playing, then there's going to be an uproar.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. I suspect Blizzard knows that. They've really got to know that. And they really have to have something really stable in place. Otherwise, they're going to have a angry mob at their door.
Also, I mean, the thing about Battle.net, I remember playing this a lot, Warcraft 3. We had our team that was like ranked, like we were in the top like 1,000. And so every time I'd play a game, it was like stakes were high, right? Because the stat tracking. And if we lost, my roommate and I wouldn't talk for like days, right? And so if you're playing like a LAN game, if you're playing a LAN game, is that gonna affect your stats too? Because sometimes like I get really into that kind of thing, you know, like stat
tracking. There is stat tracking, but I don't know this for sure, but I would be willing to bet that you know there'll be ranked games and unranked games.
Oh, that's a good point where you can say, oh, because you could do that with Warcraft 3. That's right.
Yeah, you can do that with just about any game.
And I like to think one hidden benefit of every single multiplayer game running through that service is, I mean, you see a company like Valve and how obsessed they are with metrics, right? Like tracking, you know, the certain area of Dust Bowl that rockets always hit and kill a certain player or something. Like, and if every bit of data is running through there, it gives them that much more of a resource to rebalance the game, introduce new content, make tweaks to maps, and see what the hotspots are. So that's potentially a bonus, I guess.
I mean, they've been tracking that kind of stuff for years. I mean, they have to in order to balance it, and that's they've been tracking through Battle.net, you know, for as long as they've been able to, which has been a long time. So it's not anything really new for them. I'm not sure exactly to what degree they're able to track things like, you know, hotspots on maps. Probably. They're very smart guys, and they know they need this game to be more balanced than anything else out there. So, because it's so competitive,
it's just an interesting situation where conceivably 100% of the games are going to be captured and measured by the company, right? I mean,
multiplayer, yes,
yeah,
but single player skirmish, no. You can still play a single player skirmish game by yourself without logging into Battle.net.
Sure. Okay.
So if connections are peer to peer, why not have a LAN system where you're required to log into Battle.net first, and then once you do that, it lets you create a LAN game.
Probably because that would be easier to hack.
Okay, so basically the whole reasoning behind it is piracy issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would think so. Like, I want to speculate that it's because, you know, Activision now has some ownership of a Blizzard and what they do, and maybe they're influencing that, but. You know, I mean, I guess we're kind of assuming that competitive players are just going to have to find, I mean, it's going to have to be set up in a way that every, you know, StarCraft tournament or LAN that's hosting a StarCraft II tournament, everybody's going to have an internet connection, right?
You will need to have, like, your LAN will need to be connected to the internet, yes.
Right. Okay. And
which practically these days is not, you know, so much an issue.
It is and it isn't. I mean, for the Showdown lands, we weren't able to get internet connections because the venues wanted an exorbitant fee for even one internet connection.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, I mean, you could see like some LAN parties like that have their costs go up. as a result of that.
Yeah.
I see this hurting, you know, people, like a family where most of the children are like, you know, 15 to 18 or something, and you have a brothers or something. Like, of course, this I wouldn't know this, but like my friend, they would always play Warcraft over their family LAN, and now you're gonna have to buy like two or three copies of the game, which seems maybe they'll have some sort of service where you can pay, you know, $5 for a multiplayer key or something like that.
It's possible, and they may yet roll out some kind of multiplayer spawn system, but I mean I don't really see them doing that. I mean they're gonna sell a lot of copies of this game, and they know it. So it's like
they're gonna sell three for each race, one for each race. They're already capitalizing on this. I mean, why do they have to?
Oh, well, that's not accurate. They're selling three campaigns, three separate full length campaigns. Sure. So I like every time somebody complains that oh they've broken it up into three parts just because they want to charge us three times, that's not accurate. And you're getting the full multiplayer component the first time. What you'll be paying for the second and third times is more single player content of equal length to the first one. So
yeah.
that's a little bit I discourage that kind of talk. That's hyperbole.
Yeah, I mean the analogy they like to make, this is kind of their line on it, is it's going to be like Lord of the Rings. It's going to be like Two Towers and The Fellowship and Return of the King. And, you know, that kind of like, we want to do this big epic story and, you know, we need that much amount of development time and content to roll that out, I guess. I mean, that remains to be seen if that's an accurate way of framing it. But
well, I mean, just in sheer mission count, they've got almost 30 missions in the first game, and that's how many missions were in StarCraft 1. So it's not like you're being shorted any content. The only difference is they're breaking the story up to have it in larger scope, and yes, to sell more copies. But that's because they're a business that wants to sell things to make money, and it's not like they're giving you less than what you're expecting. So
yeah, and they're going to make sure. So, I mean, it's priced appropriately. If it's,
yeah, but we're off topic anyway. But
yeah, yeah. Well, that makes an interesting case though, because like it's a good point that if you buy the second in the series, you'll be able to play someone who only
probably
has the first, right?
They haven't confirmed that yet. It could end up being that the first one has the full multiplayer component, and then the second and third are just relatively inexpensive expansions. Huh. But that information is not concrete yet. They're still mulling that over. But back to the LAN thing. It is a slap in the face to a lot of people that like you said you had the family of a couple of guys that used to play together, because they were able to do this with the old one. They won't be able to do it with the new one. They'll have to buy it twice.
Yeah, I mean, that's 99% of my experience with StarCraft is me and my brother and then my brother's friend Luke. All three of us would just get together and play StarCraft all the time.
With one copy, or did you each have? Did your brother's friend Luke have his own copy?
My brother's friend had his own copy. I did use my brother's copy. So right. We had two copies between us.
Right. So for me, like one way I look at it is as somebody who doesn't like to play against like brand new players because there's no challenge. I mean, from my perspective, it's not going to affect me that much because I'd only want to really play against people who had their own copies, who were practiced and knew what they were doing. But you know, if you do have your own LAN with multiple players in one house, then yes, it is a big difference.
It is kind of nice too if you invite your friend over. I mean, it is kind of a way to sell them on the game. Be like, hey, why don't we try this game real fast? Then if they like it, then maybe they'll go pick up a copy or something like that.
That's what a demo is for, though, and there's bound to be a StarCraft 2 demo.
So what didn't you guys say there was sort of an official word from Blizzard on the backlash or on not the you know what I mean?
Well, there was comment on it where they basically said, you know, this is, you know, we're trying to make Battle.net this great thing. We want to drive everybody to it. And also it stops piracy. So, I mean, it's very official company line stuff and, you know, nothing all that revealing. Doesn't tell you anything you don't already know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we know much about Battle.net 2.0? Is that coming out when StarCraft 2 comes out? Or
it will launch with StarCraft 2, yes. They had us down there a couple weeks ago. We went to that same event you've seen all the coverage of, or I went anyway. And they were initially going to show us the single player stuff, and then they're like, oh, that's not quite ready. We'll show you some Battle.net stuff, and then a couple days later they're like, oh, that's not ready either. So we'll just show you some more multiplayer stuff that you've already seen. But yeah, so it's like we're altering the deal. Pray we don't alter it any further. But so you know, we got to play around with that, and we got to ask a bunch of questions about this. And actually, for me, it didn't even occur to me to ask about land play, because I assumed, of course, they're going to have land play. You know, it's a kind of a standard feature. So I actually read about that when I got back. Somebody thought to ask about it. Somebody wanted to go over every single little detail. So. But I'm sorry, what was the question?
I don't remember. Their response, they kind of, people were concerned, you know, internet lag and stuff in competitive games. So the question was, how are you going to compete or reduce lag with Battle.net? And they said, you know, we'll talk about that when we discuss Battle.net 2.0. So I didn't know if we knew any features.
Yeah, I mean, lag is not going to be an issue. I mean, especially, you know, if you're trying to play it on a dial-up connection, like an old dial-up connection, maybe you'd have a little bit of lag, but I doubt it. And most modern RTS is not going to be a problem.
I'd hope so. And on the note of the developing story of boycotts, of course, the lack of land play in StarCraft II spawned its own boycott, which is currently trailing the Left 4 Dead 2 boycott, our favorite, of course, by...
Hey, it's Blizzard's second boycott in a year.
After the rainbow boycott?
Yeah.
Of Diablo 3, yeah.
So the StarCraft 2, with a total of 33,022 signatures, it's trailing the Left 4 Dead 1 by about 4,000. So keep it up, StarCraft 2 guys. You can get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been going for a few days. I mean, give them time. Their internet outrage will catch up.
Indeed, yeah. And the Left 4 Dead 2 folks, by the way, are very proud to boast that in 18 short days, we've had over 32,000 members, and there are still 140 days to go until the game releases. Well, that's fantastic. I just wanted to touch on this again real quick, because I can't get away from, like, it's, I don't want to insult the folks, because I mean, they're obviously great fans of the game. They're emotionally invested in the product, and that's a fantastic thing, but...
Well, I kind of want a boycott against us now. So maybe you should have told them, and then we'll have a boycott against us. I feel so left out of this boycott.
We'll see. But it's not like... I can't help but get caught up in the language that they use to represent themselves. So I wanted to give you guys a quick dramatic reading of an excerpt of one of their announcements. As of 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on June 17, 2009... we still have not received a response to our request that Valve provides further details regarding what's included in upcoming updates and when we can expect them. While we can understand Valve is reluctant to release all the details, we still expect a response to our inquiries. This does not mean that Valve is ignoring us. We should expect some delays, especially when we ask them to elaborate on updates, as it does take time to gather information and decide what to inform the community. We've not forgotten about this, and we will be trying to work with Valve in this matter. Okay, sorry.
It's like half communist manifesto, half like terrorist. I'm not sure.
Let me.
Well, I just don't understand why they think that. I mean, Valve hasn't told anybody about any updates well in advance in ages. I mean, they don't tell you about Team Fortress stuff in advance of you know when they're gonna like. You know, shortly before they're going to release it, why would they tell these guys?
Don't you see, Dan? They have demands.
They have they have days to respond.
Yes.
Let me wrap this up real quick. I'm skipping to a later paragraph. If you find an article from a major gaming media source that is inaccurate or slanderous, they're referring to their, you know, their own claims, bring it to our attention on the forums. We are going to try speaking to some of these folks, or failing that, to their editors. Well, I hope we hear from them. That'd be excellent, actually.
I don't know if we've said anything, you know, slanderous, other than we think they're kind of nutty.
Yes. While we take criticism, we're not going to put up with slander or false reporting. The last point we would like to discuss this evening, is what we can continue to do to keep this movement strong. As most of you have guessed, we're not going to get instant results in this effort. We're in this for the long haul. And we still have almost 5 months to the planned release day. With that in mind, keep inviting people, keep informing friends and relatives. Okay. About what's going on. Keep discussing L4D and what you want to see. Most of all, keep positive.
Be sure to get your mom to enroll in the Left 4 Dead boycott group.
Where is Patty Hearst when you need her?
Like, Dad, can you just sit down for a sec? We need to talk. Left 4 Dead 2, Dad. You need to join. Join our cause. But yeah, I mean, so hopefully, I mean, I don't want to disrespect these guys too much by using a weird voice, but...
But you did.
I did. I mean...
I don't want to do what I just did.
But I mean, it's just... Don't take things so seriously, you know, like, it's a game, give Valve a chance to try something new, to be aggressive with a successful product. I mean, that's all I can say.
And if you don't like it, just don't, you know, don't buy the next one, and they'll get the message or not, and, you know, it just, this just leads to more frustration.
These are two very, very simple, similar kind of reactions. I mean, it's something like, you know, they were expecting certain things, certain features from a new product that you know aren't going to be exactly the way they wanted, so they're kind of throwing a little fit, and it may end up not being a big deal at all. So I think they're just overreacting before all the facts are in.
Yeah, and it's fine to react. I mean, it's fine to be upset and ask questions and wonder what this is going to be like, but describing yourself as a movement and, you know, issuing these formal claims and expecting formal responses from Valve, and I don't know. It's unnecessary. All right, so getting away from all that craziness, and into some exciting stuff for Dan and myself. We were able to talk to Chris Taylor because Dan's good friends with Chris Taylor at Gas Powered Games, the folks that made Demigod, if you're not familiar. And we're going to have the chance to play them 3-on-3, me, myself, Dan, and Norman Chan.
Well, that's four people, you, yourself, me, and Norman.
I know. Excuse me.
You left out I, though.
So we're looking forward to that. We're getting pumped about that. We want to share with you guys sort of our quick strategy of how we hope the match will go down. Real quickly, I play Oak, sort of an assassin build Oak that's melee only, and Dan plays Erebus.
Yeah, I also do kind of an assassin build with the general demigods that we kind of neglect the minions for the most part. There are the priest minions that heal you, which are the first thing I always buy. They definitely keep you in the fight longer and keep you from having to run home to your base every time to recharge every time you get hurt. So those are the only minions I really buy. But other than that, I treat Erebus mostly like an assassin.
Yeah, I mean the priest minions almost make like a makeshift potion, if I'm correct, because when you cast them, they always heal you if you're nearby. Is that correct?
They do heal you immediately when they spawn. Yes.
Okay, so that's helpful. And Norm, of course, plays the Unclean Beast, yep, which has a powerful damage over time ability, the poison, the venomous spit, and he has a stun ability as well that he utilizes. So. We pretty much only play most of our matches on a map called Cataract. It's designed for 3-on-3. It seems like, just anecdotally from playing a lot of Demigod, that's the favorite competitive style map or casual map even. And it has these three flags in the middle. There's basically three lanes going up the map. And I mean, sort of our strength, like we were playing last night, I was saying, Dan, that we just really put a lot of focus on getting our war score up and capturing flags and keeping flags.
War score, for those of you who don't know, you accumulate it as you hold flags on the map. Right. As you rank up in war score, you're able to buy new and better upgrades for your team, like better minions that spawn from the portals, more money. You accumulate money more quickly, things like that. And we put a lot of emphasis on getting to war score 8. At which point you can buy the catapult minions, and then you start trying to capture the enemy's portals, and that really puts them on defensive, and they can't really do a whole lot after that until they've retaken their portals.
Right. I mean, essentially, I mean that's our cue to attack. Once we, you know, if we have the advantage in war score and we're able to buy all those minions at once, you know, the priests and the angels and the catapults, we suddenly have this big wave of allies coming into play, and that's sort of our cue to make an attack on an enemy portal and try and capture it, because then we turn their minions into our minions, and they're much closer to their base. So from then, that's our goal, to sort of hold that, lock that flag, teleport back there and sort of play defense there and keep their attention.
Well, one of the reasons I like to hold off until we get the catapults is that until you get them, your minions just aren't strong enough to take down enemy towers. So it's not really much of a threat to the enemy to take their portal if you don't have the catapults. In fact, it kind of helps them because that's just more minions for them to kill and level up with. So once you do that, then then you definitely want to go after the portals as soon as possible.
Indeed, and in terms of microing, when we're trying to actually kill a demigod, it's kind of evolved into our strategy that once we get up to level 4, level 5, we have a little bit more money, more of our abilities equipped. We try to keep a teleport scroll on hand so we can sort of teleport. And we try and create situations where we're in a one-on-one with another demigod, or even a one-on-two. We try to lure that demigod towards our own territory so
they have further to go back to their own base.
Exactly.
More time to kill them before they reach their defenses.
And so I ideally say on the left side, Norm's fighting with a demigod. He's maybe at half HP. He starts walking back toward our base, getting chased. At that point, maybe Dan and I are going to try and teleport on that left side, assuming hopefully we have that flag captured, because you can only teleport to towers or flags that you have captured or your own structures. And then we're sort of in a flanking position where we have that person cornered, and usually we're trying to stun them immediately, to keep them in position and just hail down damage. And it's been working pretty well.
But yeah, the key to our strategy mostly, and the things that we get remarks on mostly when we're playing against organized teams online, is that we really go for locking flags as much as possible, because that is what levels up your war score. So like just last night, we were playing one against a very good team, who were actually kicking the crap out of us in one-on-one fights. Mm-hmm. So we started avoiding any one-on-one fights. We're only going after them if we had a 2-to-1 advantage or 3-to-2. And just trying to lock these flags and hold them as long as possible. So they got more kills than we did, but eventually we got to the higher war score before they did, which just overwhelmed them. So there's much more to demigod than just leveling up your own character. So yeah, we're hoping, Andy, don't post this until after 3 o'clock, because that's when our match is. We don't want to give away our hand. But
do you know what characters they're going to be playing?
We do not. No, we're going in kind of blind. But they are fielding their best against us, we're told. So we're expecting a good fight.
Yeah, we'll definitely report back to you guys next week. We're trying to see if we can wrangle up video footage of that. But in either case, we'll give you guys a full report next week how it went. And
unfortunately, at the moment, Demigod doesn't have good replay support. There's kind of a hack to get it to work. They're scheduled to get that up and running in the next patch. But it does save the replay file. It just doesn't have a good means of replaying it yet. So ideally, what we'll do is capture some footage from the replay, if we can get that to work, and post that on YouTube.
So what are the stakes? Are you playing for like Max's freedom?
Oh, but bragging.
Oh, okay.
Bragging rights. It's all on the line here.
Excellent. And just in terms of like smaller tactical details, I know when we hit war score 3, when we've accrued enough points to basically, as you accrue that war score, you're able to buy certain things like the minion types or higher upgrades for your citadel, which is your base. We always make the grab for the first level of gold, which basically increases your economy. You're getting more gold over time. And that's at level 3. That's really the one thing we buy. And then pretty much we're saving. Sometimes we'll buy tower upgrades.
I mean, we definitely get the tower health upgrade.
Yeah.
Because otherwise your towers don't regenerate and they go down even faster than they usually do. So, all right. So, yeah, wish us luck. We will post on the outcome later today.
Our thoughts and prayers are with you.
We thank you for them. All right, so I wanted to play a little bit of a fun quiz type game, prediction game with you guys about holiday game releases. There's a ton of stuff, again, sort of slot is for the last Q4 of this year. And real quick, I'll just run down that list. It's going to be between October and December, Borderlands, BioShock 2, Dragon Origins, Alpha Protocol, probably StarCraft 2, we think, hopefully, Left 4 Dead 2, Modern Warfare 2, Assassin's Creed 2. And I just wanted to throw some of these titles in your guys' direction and get a sense of what you think might do better in Q1 or Q2 of next year, what would benefit from some extra polish, if you have a feeling on anything that's absolutely no way going to be delayed. Josh, I'll throw it your way first. Is there anything among that list that sticks out to you?
Left 4 Dead 2, I would not be surprised if it got pushed back a little bit, I guess. I haven't seen it in person, so I don't know how far along it is, but I would not be surprised if they took the time to make sure that it was extremely impressive.
At the moment they're locked in for November 17th, which is also the same day that Assassin's Creed 2 is coming out, which, I mean, maybe it's because we haven't seen enough of Assassin's Creed 2, we haven't played it yet, but it's surprising to me that that's coming so soon as well.
I think that Valve would never have announced a release date as far in advance as they did if they didn't intend to hit it. I think they'll be done with it significantly in advance of that date.
The one thing the title benefits from is the director AI, right? I mean, basically you build levels and the director essentially populates them. I mean, I know you have
it takes a lot of tweaking too. It's not that simple.
Of course.
I think it benefits from the fact that it is a relatively minor update. Like we said, it's more of a Left 4 Dead.
Sorry, lightning just struck like right outside my house.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a static. Oh,
man, I'm like deathly afraid of lightning.
Okay, Andy will be podcasting from under his desk.
Wow. You know what's scary about lightning is when it hits you and.
Yes.
There's no
yes,
answer. It is. There's no answer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway. Left 4 Dead is a relatively minor update from Left 4 Dead 2 is a relatively minor update from Left 4 Dead 1 in terms of creating new content. They are creating new campaigns, new characters, new infected, but they've also got their existing infected. They've got their existing balance is being tweaked more than initially created. That's a much bigger hurdle, and they also have most of the underlying technology already in place. So that's a less of a big thing to do. And you could say the same thing for Assassin's Creed too. It's more content on the same engine with the same mechanics with some additions. So they're both revisions rather than anything huge and new. And also, they're both very big games that have promised release dates that I don't think they're going to miss.
All right, very good.
Is there going to be a trend this year that we saw last year where PC games are coming out 3 months to 6 months later than the console release? Is that kind of gone away? What do you guys think?
I think Battlefield's the one that sticks out.
Battlefield 1943?
Excuse me, yeah, I was searching for that. Yeah, that's coming out this month, I think, on console, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's coming out on the 10th for console and in September for PC.
Okay, so that's not too much of a delay.
Yeah, it's a couple of months. It's annoying. It's not, a huge deal, but it's annoying. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Assassin's Creed. That didn't come out until much later.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not sure on that one. Do you know, Evan, do you know if they're doing a simultaneous release?
For which game? I'm sorry?
Assassin's Creed.
I'm not sure.
Heard anything on that either.
Made a point of saying that the PC is coming out later.
Right.
So we'll have to clear that up with them, but they haven't been volunteering the information.
Yeah. For myself, Andy, I don't think there's going to be a trend of that, mostly because a fair amount of the games I mentioned are PC lead. I don't know if Borderlands is, Dan, but Dragon Age certainly is. StarCraft 2, obviously. Left 4 Dead 2, definitely. Alpha Protocol is.
I mean, define lead. I mean, they're being developed simultaneously, I would say.
It's developed at least as much for the PC as it is for the consoles.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and those are all simultaneous releases. So is BioShock 2, or did Jordy say that? They're all at least valuing the PC release as much as the console release.
So the one, I mean, with about this more than anybody, Dan, since you play Borderlands, but With the art direction change, would you expect that to, you know, push it back in the Q1?
I would not be surprised to see it fall back, and in fact, I think it would help it. And just because it is a new IP and competing with a bunch of established things like Call of Duty, that would be tough on it. I think it could definitely benefit from releasing in a less competitive window. And not because, you know, I don't think there's, from based on what I play with it, I don't think there's any technical reasons that Gearbox shouldn't be able to overcome in time. But I do think that a later release would benefit its sales.
Good to know. I think we'd certainly expect Modern Warfare 2 to drop on its expected November 10th date.
Yep.
Because it's the flagship game for Activision this year. It released the same time 2 years ago, the original Modern Warfare, so I think that's pretty well locked in. They're very disciplined about their development, and
you would not want to miss the season, you know.
World at War came out the same time last year. So.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. All right, so here's the big one. We've already been talking about it this podcast, StarCraft II. If you had to pick a month this year or next year, what would it be?
It's a tricky one.
I say February.
Really? You're going to go into 2010, huh?
Yeah, just because, I mean, even with Burning Crusade, I mean, it made so much sense to hit that Christmas window. And they just, screw it, they're going to sell tons of copies anyway. They don't need Christmas.
Right, but I mean, Burning Crusade was an expansion for an existing base, whereas StarCraft, there are a bunch of people that are playing it, but there are also a bunch that are not currently playing it that they need to count on buying it. I think they will definitely hit holiday.
You think so? I mean, the beta is going to be this summer, right?
Beta could start any time now.
Anytime. And are they going to have enough time from beta feedback to, like, and
it depends.
Like,
I mean, having played it myself very recently, it's you know, very solid all you know, feature wise.
Yeah.
It's just balance tweaks. You know, how much they think it needs, and they've already got professional StarCraft 1 players coming in and playing it to test the balance. So they're doing a lot of testing internally.
But it's nothing, somebody just put it out there to the masses.
Yeah. Somebody's going to find out a way to break something, but you know, I think they will. They have at least a damn good shot of making it this year, and if they can, I think they will.
All right, so I'm gonna go ahead and call first week in November. That sounds about right to me. That's also Bioshock 2 on November 3rd, but for whatever reason, it just feels right to me. I think they can hit that date if they want to.
I'm gonna pair up with Josh here and say February.
I think I'm gonna go with Josh too.
I'm gonna say late October.
Wow.
Ooh, so optimistic.
Yep.
Andy, you're the tiebreaker.
No, I'm going with Josh and Logan.
Oh, good man.
Yes.
February 2010.
Yes. We win. We win. Yes.
3-2 majority. All right. Well, I'm going to write that down somewhere. Maybe we can revisit it when the release date does get announced.
I agree with Bioshock 2, though. November 3rd. That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. That was fun. Let's move on to some more fun and get some questions from our listeners here.
Hey guys, I'm just calling in. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I have a question. One of my friends have told me before that you can get high by burning a ram stick. And I'm just curious, I don't know if this is true or if he's just pulling it out of his butt. Now, it's true, I would like to know maybe the ill effects of it. Thanks guys, love the podcast. Bye.
Good God, I didn't think things were that bad in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
He wants to know the ill effects of pulling a ram stick out of your butt.
Or snorting.
I can think of a number.
Yeah, they are kind of sharp, aren't they? But I guess maybe in the same way you might be able to get a high by inhaling any kind of burning plastic and does silicon even burn? I don't even. Yeah, that's
it melts.
That's absurd. Yeah,
it's nothing
I mean,
that sweet DDR3 high.
Actually, I'd like to. I think we should refer this caller to a website. It's Darwin Awards. DARWINAWARDS.com. Just poke around the site a little bit. I think you'll find people with some similar, you know, questions and you can check on their experiences and see how they fared with you know, finding new and interesting ways to express themselves.
Yeah, swap stories.
Yeah.
I mean that really sounds like one of the dumber things you could possibly do. I mean, well, okay, you can get a lot dumber than that, but when it comes to you know, ways to get high, I think yeah.
Pick the wrong week to stop smoking RAM.
You know, it's true that it has gotten cheap lately, but geez.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think would be best? Would DDR3 be best? I don't know. Is it more potent?
Dude, that you know that Rambus is hard to find. It's like
Oh, you got Rambus? Oh, dude. Weekend's coming up.
Wow.
let's get away from this and clear away the clouds.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Steven. I have a few questions for you. One of them is, you talk a lot about really old games. Say they're not bad, but what are some only kind of old games that you really like? And also, Valve continuously updates Team Fortress 2, and you guys were so good at predicting Monkey Island at E3, so what do you think Valve is going to update in the upcoming Team Fortress 2 updates? They're not going to be anytime soon, but what do you think they're going to update? What classes? What items? Like for the soldier, obviously, they might update a grenade or something like that. And also, what do you think they're going to do as regard to more updates? Because updating new maps isn't going to keep the community. Thanks, bye.
All right, so on the Team Fortress question, I'm sort of personally, for whatever reason, I have a crystal globe or something, expecting the Demo Man to be the next one to update. It just kind of feels like it slots into the existing mechanics.
What's well, left, the Demo and the Soldier?
Demo and the Soldier.
Why not both?
Yeah, they just did two at once. They could do two at once again.
Well, first of all, the Soldier is they're both offensive classes, mostly. They both have similar weapons in that they both, you know, shoot and explode things. I would expect them to be separated. I mean, the Spy and the Sniper have such a dichotomy, like that kind of relationship that they have in the game, that it made sense to sort of theme it that way. But anyway,
do you think it helped with the initial burst of like people, like everybody playing as the updated class, to have two different classes that were updated?
Oh yeah, it certainly did. It certainly did, especially since some of the mechanics played upon each other with you know, the Sniper shield, for instance, countering the Spy. But yeah, so for the Demo, there was an early video, I don't know if it was the initial trailer, for Team Fortress 2, that showed the Demo sort of, he had this bundle of TNT that he'd sort of swing around like almost like a bola, if that makes sense.
And he
bolo, yeah. And he tossed it forward and at a sentry in the video's case. And anybody that's played Team Fortress Classic remembers that the Demo Man has something called which is the, you know, the prequel to Team Fortress 2. He has something called a debt pack, which he'd drop, basically. He'd deploy it in a position and it'd take about, I think, 8 or 10 seconds. I'm sorry, between 20 or 50 seconds to arm. And then he'd issue this giant explosion, with the disadvantage being that you had to, you know, put it in one position and sort of plan that somebody would be there when it explodes. So I'd expect something along those lines. I don't know how it would make sense, but maybe another anti-sentry item for him.
And we just did. We were just replaying some Freedom Force, which is from 2002, and that's on Steam and works fine on Vista or 7. Actually, I did have one little glitch with Freedom Force on Windows 7 64-bit that I solved by. This was like the cursor was locked in attack, so I couldn't like move without right clicking and selecting move. So it was really annoying. But I was able to fix that by going into the Steam folder under my username and Steam apps, and right click on freedomforce.exe and say run in XP compatibility mode, and it worked fine. And that's a fantastic game. And it's also on Steam now, as well as its sequel, Freedom Force versus the Third Reich. Other like not so old games that we recommend. I don't know. Far Cry is a brilliant one.
Mm-hmm.
Far Cry 1. Anyone else got one they want to throw out there?
I played Alice maybe like 4 or 5 months ago, and it held up all right. It's still pretty fun.
Yeah, that's from what, 99 or somewhere around there.
Really?
Yeah,
it's amazing how well it has held up. I guess because it's sort of abstracted anyway, and so stylized, but. You know, I play a lot of older games, and I just think, look at those textures. Ugh, it looks terrible, you know? I don't see that in Alice at all. I think it really held up fantastic. Plus, you know, the sound was done really well, and that helps.
That's why it drives me nuts when people complain about stylized graphics. because in a few years you look back and the stylized ones look great and the non-stylized ones look like crap.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yep. I would also suggest maybe Supreme Commander, which is now about 3 years old. If you're into an RTS that requires a lot of econ management, but is also huge scale and has nuclear weapons.
I was also thinking about going back in Oblivion. That's a few years old at least. About three? Yeah.
2006, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I wanted to go back and play through the Thieve mission games after playing Assassin's Creed because it just reminded me of how great those missions were.
Mm-hmm. So how about Max Payne to relive the glory before
yes.
Max Payne 3 comes out and may or may not ruin it for everybody.
I'm going to lean towards it.
We'll see. It's way too early to make any predictions on that one.
No, it is not. I predict. I hate the way he looks. Oh my gosh, it's not Max Payne.
Max Payne has hair.
Oh my god,
it doesn't bother me. I like that it's different, you know, because yeah, I like the first one. I like the second one, but a third one that was just like the previous two would have been, come on, you know.
Right.
I'm gonna play number two again because it had some great levels. It really had some terrific levels. And just the feel of the shotgun in Payne's hands, just, not that I'm a violent person.
That's the feel of actually getting shot by the shotgun. It's the So, yeah.
Yeah, the two shooters I'd put down is that I come back to that aren't too old. Counter-Strike Source has some of the best ragdoll and obviously some really classic levels in there that... I had this stage a couple weeks ago where I just hop into a bot server. So it'd be like 3-on-3 with bots. And I just open the Steam browser and turn on Pandora. And I just had my station running and playing against AI. Like, there's something cool and casual about it that I liked. And Tribes, which is a little older. So it might fall out that range, but it's a classic by all means.
That should keep you going for a while.
Along those lines, I guess we've reached the end of our podcast. I want to get you guys to mention your playlists, what you've been up to. Dan and I have been playing Demigod. We're about to play Demigod in another hour.
Yeah, we're training.
But other than that, Dan, yourself.
Yeah, and my free time has been largely Demigod lately. It's a very addictive game. I made the traumatic mistake of joining a few games without my partners And when you're not as coordinated, it's you're much more likely to lose. So it's messed up my stats a little bit. But I just started playing Ghostbusters a little bit last night.
Ooh.
And I don't know, like initially the animations and dialogue reading is kind of stiff. I was expecting a little bit better. But maybe it gets better as we go on. I only played like the tutorial missions. And what else have I played? I was playing some Freedom Force, so
great,
which is awesome.
So, Jack, I've been waiting to hear all about the insane worlds you've created in The Sims 3 that I've been seeing you play on Steam.
Yes, the world I've actually had to recreate thrice now because
I keep
getting blue screens of death.
Really?
And yeah, it's really weird. It's usually after I've been playing for like an hour, and you know, like a fool, I haven't been saving, and so. Okay.
Do you immerse your laptop in water?
Yes, frequently.
Oh shoot! Yeah,
are you trying to get high off your RAM sticks? Maybe while your computer's on.
Okay. No, it's really weird. Yeah, it hasn't been any particular like you know when I'm doing a certain thing in game. It just after a while it just kind of dies. So it didn't happen last night. I played for 2 hours. So
have you Googled around to see if anybody else is having that issue?
Not really yet. When I recovered, you know, Windows, the little helpful pop-up come and says that it's because a graphics driver failed. And, you know, I had updated the graphics driver to the latest one. Is there a Falcon?
That was Gary's contribution to the podcast.
A Falcon call.
I showed him my framed sock puppet monkey in it.
Oh, that's cool.
And freak out.
Wait, what? Never show anyone that ever again.
It looks like one of the worms from Sesame Street.
I
All right, so anyway, no, but Josh was saying something before it's really interesting.
With Sims 3, like, I've never I played the original Sims, so I haven't had any interaction with this aging. I don't think I like it.
You
like,
can turn it off.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to find that. Is it in the options?
Yep.
Okay, because I was just happily fishing and cooking, and then all of a sudden it's like, it's your birthday. You need to get married and have a family right now, or else you're going to be old in 10 days. And I was like, oh no. So I just dropped everything, quit my job, and started running around the city trying to find hot chicks.
Like real life.
Yeah, and you don't you don't have to do that. I mean, it's not going to punish you for not doing it.
I know, but then, like, if he dies and he doesn't have kids, does my game end? Like,
Well, that character would end. You could create a new one or take over somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was just kind of bummed by that because I was just happy fishing and cooking up, like, the fish and making meals. Then, so I just kind of got sidetracked, and so now I was trying to find ladies that aren't completely offended by him.
So wait a minute. Your ideal game is one where you fish and eat and
Well, he's a World of Warcraft player.
he fishes and eat and cooks and eats the fish every day for all eternity.
He also has a day job as a thief.
Okay.
So he has that exciting life. You know, the boring home life is just a cover. So, you know, he doesn't draw suspicion to himself.
Does he steal fish?
He can.
Okay.
He
can.
Yeah, with the aging stuff, I can imagine little pop-ups coming up to remind you to check your get your prostate checked and things like that. You have osteoporosis.
I just really want to be a ghost at the end and come back and haunt, like, little kids. I just think that'd be funny.
You, the ghosts are controllable now, yeah.
They are?
You can mess with the ghosts, yeah.
Yes.
I actually haven't done that yet, but I went to the graveyard and saw some ghosts flying around, and I've read other people's accounts of controlling them. But.
All right. I'll be leaving Age on then for now.
All right, Logan. You've already shared your wonderful worm-type thing with us. So
yes.
Share everything.
I have also been indulging in Freedom Force, as I had no idea what a great game it was. I never played it. I passed it up because the first time it came out because I was just not into the whole superhero thing.
I can't believe that Chuck Osborne never convinced you to play that game.
I just never, you know, there were so many other things. I remember it when it came out, and there was just other stuff too. I'm like, whatever. And
it is probably Chuck's favorite game ever.
It's just, it's really fantastic. And, you know, it's just one of those things you don't think about the graphics or anything after a while because you just get into it and you're there.
And the graphics aren't bad.
No, they're not bad. It's just you don't even think about them, you know, because you just imagine them as being almost real anyway, you know, because you're into it and you're doing it. But I'm actually still playing Prototype. I'm almost my second way through. I really don't like all the challenge missions. I just like playing the story missions over and over again, getting stronger and stronger and killing everybody in my wake. And not in my wake, you know, even people who are just minding their own business. I did launch Ghostbusters. It just hasn't grabbed me yet. I agree with you on the readings, which are, you know, I
expected more from Bill Murray.
Yeah, you know, they feel flatter, maybe because it's not a tightly directed and edited movie, you know? Lines just tend to hang there, and you're like, eh.
Bill Murray has done voice work. You know, he did those Garfield movies.
Yeah, we shall not speak of that again.
Which, I don't know, I never saw him, but, you know, he's done voice work in the past. Yeah.
We have a nice, long, yummy weekend ahead, so I think I've got my Arma 2 code, and I think I'm just going to pass up on, I'll keep my save games for Ghostbusters and get into Sims 3 this weekend. I was really upset because it finally happened. I knew it would eventually, but my beautiful Dell XPS laptop just is not cutting it anymore. I know, for the first time I was like, I don't want to go that low resolution, you know, and I installed The Sims 3 and I kind of cranked it up and I installed Ghostbusters on there as well, and it just wasn't doing it. I'm like, no, but you know, it's been over 2 years now, so I'm not going to complain too much. I mean, it's still a great laptop. I can still use it for lots of things, but I just miss having the laptop that can do it all.
Yes.
So I really want to play Sims 3 at a high resolution. I don't know why. So I'm going to put it on my desktop.
Well, it does suffer a little bit at lower resolutions. It does not.
Yeah, I want to see all the detail. I want to see all the stuff going on, you know. It's just something that I really want to play at a high resolution. Even Ghostbusters, I can deal with lower res. That's not a big deal. So I guess it'll be now my adventure game laptop.
Very good.
Yeah.
Andy.
I sessioned prototype over the weekend, finished it up, and yeah, so I don't think
what's your final verdict?
Dude, I think it's a great game. The gameplay is just great. I don't know if I'll play through it a second time, though, because I just have other stuff I want to get to. Like, I started playing the Arma 2 demo to see if I was going to, you know, go full in on that, and I'm not sure yet, because it was kind of weird, and I think I will eventually if I have some more spare time, but, like, I got to the training mission where you have to you shoot the tank with the tubes, they call it, like the anti-tank weapons, and it was like, pick up this thing, and I was like, couldn't figure out how to pick up this thing, and then I think I was doing it, and I think it was some sort of grenade, and I kept throwing it and blowing up the trainer, like, on accident. I had no idea what was going on. I was like, what is that noise? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it was so many confusing things sort of in that game to get over. But, you know, from what I hear and read, once you get the hang of it, it's such a freaking cool game.
From what I hear, the AI never really quite works right. Which takes something away from it, but just the sheer skill and realism of it, are something to behold.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm continuing to find appealing. That I'm still playing and working my way through the campaign, which I'm not exaggerating, has some of the worst voice acting.
Yeah.
Ever. Just poorly localized. I mean, lines literally like you can absolutely tell. Like,
do your best, Arma 2 voiceover impersonation.
Okay, so it's important to note that there's a system within the game for identifying targets on the fly, including for your own character. So when you're in the field and you spot an enemy or a vehicle, you'll give the name, the location, and the distance of that enemy. So your character or your teammates will just be like, enemy man, left, flank, at 300 yards. And this is literally not a whole phrase. It's like a Mad Lib of different phrases of, you know, the location and the name.
So right. It's, so it's like the movie phone guy.
Yeah. It's swapping out different items and variables and as an actual sentence. And it sounds awful, but I mean, for fans of the game, it's kind of a charming little thing about it. But for the actual campaign stuff, I mean, they literally grabbed an intern and had him read a line like with no delivery, with no emotion, and I mean, there's instances, even in the first minute of the campaign, where you're being briefed, and they wanted to add a little segment or an introduction to a sentence, so they had one of the developers over in Europe record that part, and they just stitched it to the sentence itself. So it's literally a different voice within that same sentence, and things like that. But I continue to stick with it. It's fantastic. I guess I'd encourage you guys just to develop some proficiency with it, get a little comfortable, and then we'll play a co-op game and you'll fall in love with it, I think.
Yeah, I'll download it this weekend, give it a shot.
No, cool. I mean, that sounds like the holy grail of the game is just playing a huge co-op against the enemy AI.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just the fidelity, knowing that every bullet and distance and, you know, just the... that everything is measured and realistic, and you're calling out targets to each other in some relatively realistic way. And
yeah, I should get terrible voice. Get better.
yeah, of course. Yeah.
So if we're talking over Skype while we're playing, are we going to have to talk like there is an enemy fan to your right?
Unknown.
No. I think you can disable that stuff too if it gets on your nerves. But anyway, for myself, other than Arma, a Demigod, of course, a Little Team Fortress 2, and I was very excited to. I visited Obsidian Entertainment earlier this week, and I got to play Alpha Protocol, the first person to play Alpha Protocol, and got to play with that for a few hours. And you'll be reading about it in, let's see, August?
It'll be a little while before I get to you, but hopefully we'll still be the first people to play it by that time.
In-depth. Indeed. All right, well, thanks so much for joining us on today's podcast, guys. I really enjoyed our conversation about StarCraft II and release dates. If you want to submit a question for next week's podcast, and we'd love it if you did, by the way, shoot us an MP3 at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can just call us on your cell phone or your amazing rotary phone, if you have one of those, at 877-404-1337, extension 724, if I'm not correct, Andy?
That is correct. 724 is PCG on your letters on touchtone phone.
Fantastic.
On the triple tap.
Send us some questions, guys. Let us know what you think about the StarCraft II LAN play, if you're in the boycott group or if you think it's no big deal.
And let us know if you want to boycott something else.
Yeah.
You know?
Ourselves.
It's so in right now.
It is. It is. And on that note, we'll
Isn't there also, you guys are having a demigod night tomorrow night.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
About it.
All right, we also want to mention real quick on the note of Demigod, we've been having game nights with you guys every week. It's usually been on Thursdays, which is today, but we're going to have this one tomorrow, and it will be Demigod at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. Just look for us on the Demigod custom games list, and it should be named PCG Game Night, and the password should be Monkey. So feel free to join us there. We'll hopefully get a couple games going for you guys. And until then, we'll remain vigilant in the 137 days until Left 4 Dead 2, waiting for our demands to be met. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks.
Can somebody
Oh my god.
Can you hear?
No!
He did it again.
The rest of the podcast will be spent discussing what Logan did.
I was going to say, we were like treading into the white hot internet heart of YTMD, and then that sort of just happened. fashion. That was like such a fashion of YTMD.
It was.
You're the man now, dog.
You do that very well.
It has such very, very tone. Yeah, it really just kind of...
Well, it's Connery.